Welcome to StratCom Live, the podcast for small business and nonprofit marketing. Hey, listen, today we're going to talk about NANO, the National Association of Nonprofit Organizations and Executives, about their secret weapon. And you might be surprised to find out what it is. Right, Kelsey? They're going to be surprised when they find out what their secret weapon is. I hope so.
Every time we say NANO, the National Association of Nonprofit Organizations and Executives, it's such a mouthful. You know, but you have to throw it out there. So what is NANO? You know, very well known in their field, of course. But
yeah, they're very well known in their field. And so the only reason we're spelling it out is for those people that aren't familiar with them.
Sure.
And that number is shrinking every day. The people that aren't familiar with them, because they are disruptors that are getting attention, which is, I think, is kind of cool. We'll talk about them in a minute. But what we're going to do, guys, is what we want to do here at StratCom Live, our vision, right, is to help you tell your organization's story to the people that matter the most. And so if you've got a nonprofit or a small business, you've got a message that you need to get in front of customers, in front of donors, in front of people that matter. And that's what we're here to do. We want to help you do that. Right.
And especially in the field of nonprofit communications, nonprofit marketing, outreach, community outreach, that's can be very, very difficult in that realm, because there are two audiences that you are trying to appeal to. Not only the individuals and systems that your nonprofit organization serves, but more importantly, the donors and funders and other supporters that make the mission possible in the first place. And that's kind of a newer philosophy. It's, you know, it's NANO's philosophy. But yeah, that's something that you really, really need to hammer home. And it's a difficult thing to do. And we're going to kind of explain here how we're doing it.
And we come along and add a third audience to that, which is the AI algorithms and robots that are trying to take over the world. And you're also trying to appease them as well, right?
Right.
And so finding that balance of how to communicate that message in a way that does all of the things to the different audiences you need to reach, that's what we do at Grand River Agency, which is kind of the parent company of StratCom Live. So, you know, before we get into our questions of the week and we jump into our topics there, I just want to encourage you, make sure you go to subscribe to this podcast. If this is something that you like, leave us a rating and a review, tell your friends about it, share it with somebody that you know that would get a lot out of the stuff that we're doing, so that we can spread the word. But also go to grandriveragency.io, because we want to help you amplify your message.
And or grandriver.agency, because helpful hint, they go to the same place.
Right. And grandriveragency.org.
So that's correct.
Whichever one you remember after this conversation, or if you click in the show notes, we'll have the link there as well. And you can go check out our stuff.
Who are we, Josh? Should we introduce ourselves?
Oh, yeah. I'm Josh Hatcher. And I'm the co-host of and the vice president of client success at Grand River Agency. Mm-hmm. And who are you?
And I am Kelsey Bowden. I am the president and founder of Grand River Agency. And I am also a co-host on this podcast. If you couldn't tell, I'm also speaking here.
Yes, we are both. We are co-anchors. So, hey, Kelsey, we like to do some fun questions just so we can kind of get to know each other. And I want to encourage our audience too, like, send us the answers to these questions too. Like, we want to know what you think about these things, because it's kind of fun. So if
I want to know you.
Yeah, we want to know who you are. So when we ask these questions of ourselves, we also want to know you, the listeners. We want to know your answers to these questions, because we care about you and we want to know you and what's going on in your life. So our first question today, what is your favorite board game or card game?
Is that one directed at me?
That's for you, Kel. It's for our audience too. So, but it's all
perfect. Okay. So, card game. I'm going to give you both, actually. Okay. Card game, blackjack. And there's really not much to say with that one, other than when I was in my earlier in my career, when I was in my early 20s and I was still working at the newspaper, I, you know, was in more of my getting out and trying to party stage, you know, of my life, back when I wore a younger man's clothes. And when I would be leaving the office, it was often very, very late at night after deadline. So sometimes I wouldn't be leaving until 2:00 in the morning, 2:30 in the morning. And of course, all the bars are closed and all that stuff. I needed something to do. So I often found myself at the casino just on the expressway there. And just so I could go there and have a drink or what have you. And I would be at the blackjack table where the odds are supposedly better than any other game in the house. And that didn't stop me from losing my butt a time or two. But that was definitely my thing for a while, you know, and then obviously I grew up and stopped doing so much of that nonsense. But my favorite board game right now, and this is funny and interesting, is actually Kids Monopoly.
Kids Monopoly.
Kids Monopoly.
Do you play with your daughter?
I do. That is one of Talia's favorite games to play now, and she will be turning 8 next month. And it's just, it's all of the, you know, it's the same concept of the adult Monopoly, except it's much more simplified. You know, you're going around and buying up properties, and eventually someone ends up being broke. It doesn't take 4 hours to finish, and by the end, someone's flipped over the table because they've gone broke and they're so frustrated with it. It's for my daughter. I really like it because it has taught her, and she jumped into this right away. It taught her to lose with dignity and grace, you know, because like I said, you can get frustrated. You're going broke in that game and everyone has all the expensive properties and stuff and you're landing on Park Place and you're down to your last. Well, in this game, it's only the $1 Monopoly. So there's not the different, you know, financial, the monetary denominations or anything like that. But yeah, it is taught her. She actually thinks it's funny when she's down to like her last couple bucks, which is, in the real world isn't so funny, but the way she's just so cute about it, she's like, "Dad, I'm broke." And I'm like, "You and me both, honey."
So basically, we're training her to be our CFO is what's happening here.
Yeah, someday she will be our CFO, 100%. Her mother is a financial guru, and I anticipate that she will probably take more after her mother in that than maybe becoming a writer for hire like myself. But actually, the first time that we played, it was with her grandfather, my dad, and it was just the three of us. And she just completely mopped the floor with us. It was hysterical. Awesome. Like she just came right out of the gate and just was killing us. And it took, you know, these games take like, you know, maybe half an hour to finish, you know, and then we were able to do it a bunch of times and she just destroyed us. But in recent weeks when we've been playing, she's had a lot better luck and she's been beating me pretty handily at it. So that's been nice. But like I said, she's learning how to lose with dignity and she's having fun. And I think it's fun. And so, yeah, definitely my favorite board game right now is Kids Monopoly. That's
awesome. I think my favorite card game, I'm not big on learning new games because I get frustrated trying to remember all the rules. So like I'll have friends like, "Hey, you want to play a card game?" And it's like Canasta or Pinochle. And I'm like, I'm lost. I'm so lost. I don't. So I like simple games like, you know, Go Fish and Crazy Eights. But my favorite game, honestly, is we call it Prison Rules Uno. Okay. And so what you do is you have like all of the leftover. We started playing this at the community center that I used to work at. And so you have all these, you know, random neighborhood kids would come in every night. And we had like 10 random Uno decks missing half the cards. And so you put them all together. And one of the rules is you don't shuffle them. You shuffle them when you start, and then you don't shuffle the deck for the rest of the game. And then, so your pile of cards is this big. And if you put down a 2, you know, it means that, let's see, if you put down a 2, it means, no, let me say this again. If you put down a 7, you get to trade with anybody, trade hands with anybody that you want.
Okay.
And if you lay down a 0, all of the cards have to move in the direction that you're playing. right? And okay. if you ever lay down two cards, like you could, if you have two twos, you could lay down two twos. If you have two sevens, you can lay down as many sevens as you have, right? And you can lay them down, and then you can trade cards that many times, right? So it gets really crazy. And like what happens is a lot of times people will end up with a seven or a zero at the end of the game, and then they're basically giving their win. So they play their last card and it's a zero. That means you're giving your win to the next person. And the whole game gets really crazy and everybody gets really mad. And so we started calling it Prison Rules Uno. Well, then one time I got invited to, I have a friend that does some outreach to the recovery community. And so there's actually some guys that have spent some time in prison, and we got to introduce them to Prison Rules Uno, and they weren't impressed. Like, where's the shanks?
I was going to say, like, what are you playing for? Like, are you playing for like ramen noodles or something? Ramen noodles. Whatever's in the commissary. Toothbrushes. Ramen noodles and cigarettes.
Yeah, no, but it's definitely, it's a fun take on the game, and it can go on forever because, I mean, Uno can be like that anyway, you know, but it can be one of those games, especially when you have that many cards in the pile and you didn't shuffle them. So like the pain comes really fast when, you know, you let's say you can't play, so you have to draw. Well, you keep drawing until you can play. So you might have a stack of, you might have one card, and then the next round you've got 20. And the ones that you drew have all been aligned according to the game ahead of it, right? Mm-hmm. Or according to the hands ahead of it. So you've got like all kinds of crazy combinations that you can play, and it just gets wild. We have a good time with that.
That's awesome. Do you have a board game?
I'm a big fan of Monopoly and Yahtzee. Those are fun games.
My mom likes Yahtzee.
Yahtzee is a fun game. I enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not a big, I'm not a big board game person. Again, I don't like learning new things. Our family got us the game Jumanji. And now it's not like the game in the movie where like you actually unleash like a jungle, but it's a game that like the game has like a plot and you actually have a winner and there's points and all of that. But it's so ridiculous because you actually have to like act out some of the things, and you know, you might have to get like a cushion from your pillow or a cushion from your couch and pull your teammate across the room on the cushion.
So you know,
it's like random stuff like that. And it just gets really crazy when we play it with our family. It gets really loud and ridiculous. So that's
another game here. Actually, this was a gift from a client. This was a gift from Brittany.
Okay.
I'm going to pull it down. Hold on one second.
Here, go get it.
I am actually wearing pants for this.
That's a good thing.
For this podcast. I'm doing this from the home office, but I actually did decide to put on.
Kelsey stood up in front of the camera for anybody that's just listening and not watching. Yes. So if he had been wearing underwear only, which happens sometimes here at StratCom Live, we work sometimes in our underwear. That would have been a really interesting view. But fortunately, that didn't happen today.
So this was a gift. The Titanic
board game.
So and we haven't had the chance to play it yet. Uh-huh. I'm not even sure what the premise is, other than you're on a sinking ship or so. Whatever. But yeah, that looks like it could be a terrifying time or a very good time. I don't know.
You should get like one of those floating tables and play it in your pool.
And make sure the water's really, really cold. Got to go out there in the middle of winter. Someone
climbs on the table and then you die.
Yeah. And there's room on that table for two rows. There was room on that door. Anyway, okay. Yeah. Next fun question. What do we got? What do we got here?
Let's ask this one and let's go through this one kind of quick so we can get to the heart of our podcast. But if you could instantly become an expert in any field, what would it be?
Auto mechanics.
Yeah.
Auto mechanics, for sure.
Is that to save yourself money?
That too. But I'm no, you know, handyman or anything like that. I can do the basic things with my vehicle. I can change a flat and the oil, and I've done brakes and things like that, and like more of the elementary type stuff. Mm-hmm. But it would be very, very nice to know more. And I'm also not the type of dude who, you know, if I'm taking my car to a shop, where I would be overly paranoid that I would be getting taken advantage of. I don't feel that that happens to me. I think that sometimes when I'm interacting with you know, someone at the shop, they tend to think that I'm a little bit more intelligent than the average the average bear. Right. So, but I'm not necessarily worried about that. But there have been some times where, like, I've had to look up something myself when they've said, "Oh, this is like a 3.5-4 hour job," and I look it up and I'm like, "There's a you know, a 15-minute YouTube video on how to do this myself. Why are you telling me that?"
Right.
So, yeah. So if there was anything, yeah, to become an expert instantly in something like that would be very, very helpful, you know. But until then, I know to do the basic things.
The basics. Yeah, I am definitely not a mechanic, and I don't like it, so I wouldn't want to become an instant expert in it. But I think for me, I would want to be an expert in like programming, because I can't tell you how many times I will come against something where I want to be able to create a program that does something, right? Like, and I'm not a coder. I don't understand. Like, I know a little bit of HTML. I know a little bit of CSS. I know enough to fix most things when there's a problem.
Right.
But I don't understand the languages, and there's so many of them, and how they all interact. And like I know that there's a lot of opportunities out there right now to link up AI with e-commerce, and to, you know, basically you can create streams of passive income, but you have to be able to know how to write the program stuff to set it all up. You know, I mean, if I could spend 2 days writing a program to interface, you know, AI with something else to get what I want, to make it do what I want it to do in the background, right? And not have to do the work and have that thing make me money, I would be all about that. Because I did 2 days worth of work that could make me money for the rest of my life.
Right.
So I would love to be able to have that skill instantly. Now, I don't care enough about that skill to invest all the hours that it would take to learn that skill in the long term.
Right.
So if I could have it instantly, I'd be all about it.
That sounds good. That sounds most good.
So let's talk about this is kind of an exciting announcement that we're talking about today, because we're going to talk about Nano's secret weapon when it comes to social media marketing, right?
The secret weapon. You mean us?
Us. Yes.
Us. Yes, we have.
Baby.
We have been, after working with Nano basically since, I mean, like, we started onboarding with them in, what was it, April?
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. I believe it was. And we started producing the social media content for them shortly thereafter. And at every step of the journey, we've been very happy to, I would say, overproduce and to beat expectations. Like, if there's a deadline to have a certain task done, like a larger task, like the short form video content, you know, we've been able to get on top of that and to produce that stuff weeks in advance of when it was actually expected. But it's not so much the timely element of like how quickly we're getting things done or what have you. It's just more of the fact that we were so successful in driving engagement really quickly that they were so impressed that they announced us essentially as their preferred social media marketing vendor for nonprofits, which is awesome. That was like that's so cool. They just came out on the website Inside Charity. They just came out with the announcement there, and you know, we're doing our best to kind of promote that also on our end, because that, I mean, there's a lot that we can do. And Nano, you know, is a worldwide organization, and with nearly 200,000 followers across the globe, and they're all essentially C-level executives and decision makers at nonprofit and otherwise charitable organizations that we would be able to help. And that's fantastic. So that's the announcement. And that's super exciting. What are your thoughts on that, Josh?
So it was really an interesting way that it all came about because, we started working with, was it Joanne Oppa that we started working with? And
also, she is on our podcast that'll be launched this week.
Yeah, I believe actually. So when you're listening to this podcast, I think it'll be the episode before this, I believe, and you'll be able to see and hear from her. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk
about nonprofit fundraising guru.
Yeah, and she's
fantastic woman. She is brilliant, brilliant fundraising guru. I'm sorry, continue, Josh.
That's right. So she is connected with NANO, the national organization, and said, "Hey, I've got these guys that you should check out." And I think they knew they needed it. They knew they needed us, but they have had so many bad experiences with people who say, "Oh, we do social media," and it's, you know, not a professional outfit, and they don't deliver what they say they're going to deliver.
Right.
And so they entered the relationship with a little bit of like, okay, are these guys who they say they are? We're taking a risk here to try this. And, you know, I think we just did what we do and bam, you know, it was like instantly we started seeing results, mm-hmm. which was pretty exciting, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, like and I can't speak for Jimmy LaRose, who, you know, the leader of NANO. I can't speak for him and his experiences other than just to say, to expand upon your previous point, Josh, that, you know, the social media marketing vendors that they had before, I mean, it was a lot of them. I think he said like 14. They went through like 14 different vendors in addition to trying their social media out in-house, which you really need to have devoted staff for. Mm-hmm. They had a lot, and that's really indicting of the industry that was their experience to go through so many different social media marketing vendors and to have such negative experiences through years along the way until you finally come across one that actually does what it says it's going to do. So I'm you know, above all, man, I'm just happy that we're able to enter into this friendship with them and this collaboration with them and, you know, actually be able to like meet their expectations and not be a complete disappointment, you know, because there's so many different social media marketing strategies out there. Even if you have a vendor that is going, that is doing as it says it's going to do, that is producing the strategy and compiling the volume of content and all of that stuff. And they're launching it. But I mean, there's so many ways that you can be ineffective.
Right.
In that, would you agree? Like there's so many ways you could be ineffective. And I feel like to have found a way, because there's also, I feel, not just one right way to do it either, but to have found a way that works is like worth its weight in gold. It really is.
The other challenge and part of that is that social media is constantly changing the game.
That too. So
if you get settled into a strategy and you're doing that strategy and you're like, this is the strategy we use. And then 2 years from now, short form video comes out, right? That's what happened. You know, if you were doing a certain strategy up until, you know, a few years ago, when really the algorithm started to become the forefront, because when Facebook and Twitter and those things first started, the algorithms worked more in the background, and the content that you would see was basically just really based only on what your connections were. And so to get noticed organically, you were only getting noticed by the people that you wanted to be, that wanted to see you. Right. Mm-hmm. And now there's these algorithms that are helping people discover new content. And, you know, if you weren't prepared for that, which we were prepared for that, then, you know, so these other social media marketing people out there weren't prepared for how to really understand the algorithm, you know, and how to really understand the new. And here's the thing, as we move forward, we are, because we're in it and we're also flexible, we understand that tomorrow the entire social media game could change and we need to then adapt. You know, when we start seeing, okay, things have shifted and now we're not getting the same results, we need to come up with a new strategy. And I think a lot of times, and it's the same thing with SEO, it's the same thing with, just about everything in this industry. The only things that really don't change a whole lot are things like public relations. I mean, that game is still pretty much the same it's always been, maybe with a little small differences here and there. Mm-hmm. You know, but even graphic design, the trends will change, right? You know, and in writing and who you're writing for and how they react to that content, those things, they shift a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, being able to adapt is going to be something that no matter who your audience or your clients are, the platforms themselves are changing the game all the time. Mm-hmm. And if you're operating on an old strategy and not understanding why you're not getting results, well, that's part of the problem, you know?
Right. It's not only the adaptability, you know, just that comes along with, you know, the changes in technology and the changes in algorithms and how the different social media platforms are operating themselves. It's the adaptability within your own strategy. To, right. You know, because how we started with them, and I don't know if we want to get into the nitty gritty with this, but I mean, like how we started with promoting content on their social media platforms was more or less spammy, you know,
right.
Spamming the algorithm, you know, trying to put out this absurd almost volume of content to say like, hey, algorithm, look at me. We're right here. This is why we're important. And this is how we're gathering engagement. But I mean, 4 months later, that strategy is being dialed back. We have already successfully completed that part of the strategy to do something different. Now, we could have just as easily just started off with one thing, started off posting for them across over a dozen different platforms that they have, that they own, you know, and we could have just started with that and just kept going with that. And that would have been the easy, lazy way to go about it. But the strategy involved doing the spammy stuff first to add credibility and authority to the stuff that we are now doing. And I think that's key.
Yeah. Like I said before, we're writing for that third audience there. At first, the first audience we were trying to do was we were trying to tell all of the social media channels. And by the way, this as a client was a beast. I remember when they first sent us the document that showed all of their channels, and I looked at it and I'm like, okay, we have a lot of different people to reach in a lot of different places. And they had, I mean, a decent following on their, I mean, the strength of their marketing has been email, right?
Yeah.
But because they've been building connections, they have seen, you know, they have a little bit of growth of people that are following their channels on social media. But they were not producing any content to get results yet. And I, even looking back through the social that they had done previously, like it had been a while since they had even really tried to engage those audiences. So we got to start with a blank slate, which meant that you've got a handful of subscribers, you know, on each of these channels, but they're not doing a whole lot. And so what we said, our strategy was, let us put as much content out as we can humanly do. Now, a lot of people out there are like, well, I can't create that much content. That is, I think, the strength of what we can do at Grand sure. River is that we can create content in bulk. And and it's real human content, not generic AI content. Now, we do use AI a little bit to help us come up with it, but then it goes through the rigorous, okay, this is what the robot says. What does a human say?
Right.
You know,
well, as we said in the previous episode that was dealing specifically with AI and content creation, is AI only gets you halfway there. It'll create a volume of social media posts for you. But I mean, you have to weed out the ones that aren't pertinent at all. You have to weed out the ones that only halfway get your message across. And then you have to change it up entirely for voice, because the AI doesn't have that empathy. It's not writing for the human audience like that. So I mean, you need to add those elements. You need to sprinkle that in, and that's a time consuming process in itself.
So I know that, you know, using that strategy, what we did is we then were able to engage an audience and start to grow an audience. But here is where, and this is the breakdown, like a lot of different kinds of products and services out there have the ability to track very well, right? So let's say I have a widget, you know, that I want to sell. I'm trying to like, okay, I have my field notes booklet, right? This is a tangible product. And if I want to sell this product, I can, you know, use e-commerce to sell it. And I can very clearly use tools that are available in social and that are available in my online platform to track the purchase of this item.
Correct.
It gets a lot harder to track when your service that you're offering is a little bit less tangible, mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, what happens with a lot of our customers and Nano in particular is we re-engaged a person who is sitting at home who is now all of a sudden starting to see their content and remembering or getting closer to the point of decision making where they're saying, I want to subscribe to this thing. I want to call Nano and reach out and buy this and or however that relationship is going to work through. And that part of their process we aren't as involved in as much either, right?
Right.
We ourselves can't track that end of it. And so we're putting this stuff out there and we're seeing engagement on social, which means we're seeing people watching it. We're seeing people respond to it. We're seeing people share it. But what we didn't know is that their phone started ringing.
Yeah.
You know? And so that means it's working. It's a lot harder to track those kinds of things. Now, there are all kinds of services out there that can help track it, but that's not our entire relationship with Nano. Our relationship with Nano is to engage an audience on social media.
Right.
And then they're letting us know this is working, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, and I think we need to kind of discuss also the nature of the content that we are promoting as well, because right. a lot of it, and this continues, even though we've dialed back on the spammy stuff, a lot of it is blog promotion because right. they have a number of different websites where they are out there producing this educational content for nonprofit leaders. And it's not just nonprofit fundraising. It's stuff about management. It's stuff about executive self-care, you know, things that would be appealing to that C-level executive who is going through and finding that on LinkedIn. You know, and the only call to action there is to just read this blog post. You know, it might not necessarily lead to them making a decision as to whether or not they're going to go to a Major Gifts ramp up training event or purchase Jimmy's new book or any of their other authors that are, you know, that they have for that are associated with Nano. So like these people, these followers may be, you know, reading, consuming their content, you know, for years mm-hmm. before actually making a decision as to whether or not they're going to do that. If it's, I mean, they can see the benefit to their nonprofit. They can see the benefit to their operations or how they engage with their board of directors or how they build an organization from the ground up. They can see the benefit, but they might be engaging with that content and in the active process of learning for a long time before actually, and that's, I guess that's to your point though, Josh, that they, you know, it's very hard to track that right. benefit specifically. Right.
Right. Right. I think because, you know, you have the whole concept of the customer's journey, right? They're working their way from awareness to, you know, engagement to then actually giving you money for something, right? Like right. that whole process. And that's kind of a universal concept. And it's very difficult to measure sometimes because not every system falls into, like, I know, like I think of HubSpot and they do a lot of training and a lot of tools that they use to walk you through that process. And HubSpot's a great tool for that. But the problem is that you can't always quantify it in so simple terms, you know,
right.
Relationship marketing takes time and it takes consistency and it takes effort. And so, you know, this client in particular and other clients as well, you know, that we know and have, like they've been putting out content for a while and we've been helping them put out content for a while. And as people start to warm up to that, then they get to the place where they're ready to make a decision. And that's right. what we want to do is we want to nurture that relationship. And it's really cool to watch it. You know, I think it's telling a story. You know, we're telling the story of who Nano is and what they do and how they serve their people. And that storytelling process is really, I think, at the heart of a lot of the work that we do with all of our clients.
Sure.
To tell that story. And I love Nano's story because it is, I mean, it is taking everything that you think you know about what nonprofit fundraising and nonprofit success is, and then it's flipping it on its head. You know, I think the term I think that we were told as we started was Jimmy LaRose is the bad boy of of nonprofit, you know? And so that's actually made it kind of fun because it's very fun to make content that's on the edge, you know?
Right. Right. Well, and you're right about that bad boy image for Jimmy as well, because like he was, you know, pretty solidly dismissed by a lot of other nonprofit fundraising gurus that are out there that are just, you know, that are promoting mission first and service and things like that. But then at the end of the day, overlooking almost the donors and funders and other supporters that make that mission possible. So, I mean, like, and I feel like he actually came across as kind of like a hated character, you know, because he was a threat to the way that they do things. I mean, it's just any sort of adjustment or realigning of philosophies like that is going to have a lot of pushback, you know, but this methodology works. And now he's coming across as not just him personally, but the organization and that and their philosophy is coming across in a more endearing and understandable way. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah. As I've been pouring into their content, which by the way, this talks a little bit about our strategy. So they have hours and hours and hours and hours of video content from their seminars and their webinars and their other things that they've created. So we get to take that and we get to pull out all the nuggets that we can use for short form video, which I think is a lot to do with their success, because right now that is the algorithm that is determining people need to see this, you know, and they're putting that, you know, those algorithms are really good about putting the right content in front of the right people. And so things like TikTok and YouTube Shorts and Facebook and Instagram Reels. And so as we're creating this stuff and putting it out there, it's getting in front of the right people. But I get to consume all of this content and I'm seeing just this, their shift. And really what's happening is there are a lot of big name nonprofit organizations out there that have crept into the realm of almost like governance or they become rule makers for the whole industry.
Yeah.
And they have, in a way, like said, and the rules and the governing that they do, they're basically setting themselves up to make more money for themselves. And they're keeping other people from being able to do things that are not wrong, unethical, against the law, or things like that. But then these guidelines come out from all these other intermediary organizations, and they will lobby and they will get the government to make these things illegal or whatever. You know, it's a whole structure in the nonprofit realm that there's a lot of politics behind the scenes that we've been fortunate that we don't have to deal with that.
Right.
But I can see where, you know, Nano comes along and they're like, hey guys, we don't have to do it that way.
Right.
And yeah, that kind of has made them, you know, the black sheep, but the people that then subscribe to what Nano is doing are seeing, yeah, if we can do this, then we can actually do the meaningful work. We can actually help the people we want to help because we can get the money to help those people. So it's just right. That shift. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. And I am 100% in support of it.
Yeah. You know, a very good example of that. And, Jimmy has noted that like right off the bat, the feasibility study scam.
Right.
Yeah. The feasibility study in their estimation, it is a scam. And in their experience, it is a scam because there's all of these different consulting agencies that are out there that are going to help nonprofits to fundraise. And the first thing that they're going to do is have them spend $20,000 on a feasibility study.
Right.
On whether or not they can actually accomplish the work that they've already been accomplishing, or at least trying to accomplish.
And imagine that $20,000 actually just going to do the work and prove that it can be done.
Right. I mean, and I don't even know what the figure would be. I just threw $20,000 out there as an estimate. It could even be more than that, depending on the consulting agency that's out there having them do that. It might even be more. So you're just wasting time and energy and precious, precious resources on on discovering for yourself, having a third party outfit discover that you can do it, I guess. Like,
yeah. And a lot of times these people have already been doing it.
Like I just said.
Like, why do you need a feasibility study to prove that I'm already doing it? You know? Right. Yeah.
So naturally the Nano and Major Gifts ramp up come out with this, and you know, the consultants that have been out there for decades peddling feasibility studies are like, whoa, pump your brakes. No, you because that affects their bottom line.
Right.
You know. So that's the story that we're trying to tell through social media. That's the journalistic storytelling that we're out there doing literally every day for them.
I love it because our relationship with Nano, because we showed that we do what we say we do. Mm-hmm. You know, Grand River Agency walked in and we're like, hey guys, we're going to do the best we can to help you guys out with this. And this is what we think is going to work. And we're going to do it. And they took the risk and said, well, okay, I think this is going to work. I think we're going to try this. And we did it. And then we proved that we could not only deliver what we said we're going to do, but then the results started coming in. And I will say, I think that a lot of what happened here is, I'm not going to call it luck, because I do think it was skill, right? Mm-hmm. It was skill on our part. But I don't think any of us expected the kind of response that we would get. I don't think that we, like, I think that, like, I don't know, I guess, like, there's at least a degree of surprise on both of our parts. Not in that we could produce the content,
right?
But we didn't expect the results to start coming in so quickly, I think.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times social media and relationship building marketing, which is what this is, takes a little more time. And, you know, they're impressed because that time was a lot shorter than either of us thought.
Right.
In terms of the results coming in. But
well, they said at the very beginning that, you know, as we, because we operate with them, we work with them on an annual contract basis.
Right.
And the understanding was that maybe even like after a full year, that we might not have even moved the needle at that point. Because, I mean, you're talking about moving collectively. If you have over a dozen social media platforms that are conveying information from even more sources, their different websites and their different places of content. I mean, like collectively, that is a juggernaut. That is a big chunk of stuff to move, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, they were saying that, you know, after a year, maybe if it didn't move the needle even the slightest bit, that it might still be a success. But I mean, like, do you want to go over the analytics, Josh, of like how much more engagement they're getting now as opposed to like 4 months ago?
Well, I'd have to pull up all of that to do the comparison on it. But I know that we were seeing, when we were looking at the KPIs, the key performance indicators, I'll just kind of highlight a couple of them. I mean, the one of them, on one of the social media channels, when you looked at the amount that it was getting in the 30 days before we started compared to the 30 days after we'd been doing it for a couple months, right? It was like an increase of like 19,000%.
Yeah.
You know, like we wanted to put that out to our people to be like, hey, look, this is, you know, we want to tell everybody, hey, look, we got an increase of 19,000%, but that number is so ridiculous, no one would even believe it.
Right.
And there was some
content. We needed more data.
Yeah. We needed to get a little more. So, but that's what we're starting to see is they went from having all of these YouTube channels, and they may have been getting across all of the YouTube channels, all of the social media channels, you know, they may have been getting perhaps a few thousand views total across all of them. Mm-hmm. And on all of the social medias, except for YouTube, I think we had 26,000 impressions, you know, views of the content compared to just a few thousand in just that one, you know, 28 day period.
Yeah.
And then when you factored in YouTube, I mean, we were getting, I think one of them had almost that number on just one of their channels.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's,
and it's worth noting that this process is still in its infancy with them.
Yeah. Yeah. And those views are also, you know, when you start to look at them and you break down, okay, so how many of those are the people they're trying to reach, right? Because the algorithm is going to serve it up to a bunch of people to kind of determine who's interested in this, who's watching it the most. And then that algorithm will then start to serve it to the people that are the most interested in it, right? And because if somebody watches the video all the way through, that's someone they know is interested. So we're starting to see a little bit of a dialing in now, where that content is not only just going out to a whole bunch of people, but it's getting to the people that need it, the people that want to see that content. Those are the people that are going to call you on the phone and say, I want to sign up for your service, or I want to join your organization, or I want to go to your event, you know, because they've really dialed that in.
And that dialing in, because you said at first, you know, we're looking at like a 19,000% increase in engagement, which is just absurd. Again, we needed more data,
right?
You know, and now that it's dialing back and honing in on the people that it needs to reach, now we're sitting around 1,400%, which is still fantastic. That is a fantastic number to be at. But now we're starting to see what it really looks like when it's that honed in. And Josh, if you were, not to make you be, you know, a prophesier of things here, but if you're going to put on your Swami hat and say, where will we be with Nano and all of their platforms in 3 months' time from now? So talking, you know, getting around what, Christmas?
Mm-hmm. So
where do you think we'll be? Where do you think they'll be? It's not about us. They'll be.
Right. So here is my prediction for what will happen. I think we're going to see, actually, we'll be putting out a little bit less content because we don't have to. Now, what we might do is on occasion, we might pick a month where we dump bunches of content to get the algorithm going again, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I would say by that time frame, what we should be seeing is a small increase, right? We may see initially some of those numbers start to fall a little bit in terms of the number of people seeing the videos,
right?
Which tells me that the social media algorithms are serving it to the right people. But what they're going to start to see is they're going to start to see the people making more phone calls, signing up for more events, and getting plugged in to you know, the rest of their content. We're going to start seeing more likes and shares on the content because the people that are getting it are the people that need to see it. So the overall impressions and reach is going to start getting smaller, but the engagement rates are going to start to go up because it's going to be engaging in the customer, you know, their ideal target market. So, and then I would say like as we keep going, like when we start to see, you know, that overall impression rate start to shrink and it starts to, you know, there's going to come a point where we're going to say, well, let's do it again. And we're going to spam it. I hate to use the word spam.
I know it's such a dirty word, but
it's a technical term too. A spam is when you're sending unsolicited email to someone, right? That's not what we're doing or what we're talking about. But what we're doing is we're overloading the algorithm with content by putting out a ton of it. Right.
And
so the algorithm is like, what do we do with this? Hey, this is good content. What do we do with this? And they start to put it out there for people. And then that algorithm starts to kind of gradually tune it in. What is also really cool about this kind of content, including our blog post promos and our short form video stuff, is that it is capturing attention weeks after it was posted sometimes.
Right.
You know, the stuff that we started with is still getting a lot of views, you know, and sometimes one of them will randomly just hit it up and it'll be like all of a sudden people notice it. And the kind of content is important too, because we're not just doing, I know I'm kind of rabbit trailing. I'm sorry, Kelsey.
That's okay. No, you're right. No, this is all valid. This is valuable.
The kind of content that we're offering too is like, so, okay, here's informative content about nonprofits that they're doing. Right.
Right.
And then, as I'm, you know, as I'm looking at short form video, then there's this really interesting story where Louis Fawcett talks about the time he went to Jimmy's house and Jimmy served him a cannoli, but he didn't know that you weren't supposed to eat a cannoli with a knife and a fork. And that video had 2,000 views in the first several days.
That's such a great story.
And it was on the platform, you know, and because it was content that, you know, and now again, those 2,000 views may not have all been in their target. But right. the algorithm said, this is interesting content. We're going to put it out there. And right. if you can hook those people in to the content that you want, it's more fish hooks in the water. It's fishing with a net versus a pole.
Correct. Yep. Hey, that was a fantastic way of explaining that, Josh.
Yeah.
You're a good boy.
That's you're a good boy, Kelsey.
You're a good boy. Good job. I lost my entire train of thought there for
a second.
I was thinking about cannoli.
We've been kind of, I know cannolis. Oh my word. I could go for a cannoli, but I'm eating keto right now. Got to figure out how to make a low carb cannoli. That would be amazing. So
right.
let's talk about really quick. So, you know, Jimmy reaches out to us and says, hey guys, you're doing such a good job. And we've had such bad experience with people who do this job before that we want to recommend you to everybody. Like it mm-hmm. completely changed. Like our relationship with him was a great relationship. He pays us money to do work for him. And mm-hmm. now he's saying, hey, all of you guys out there,
his 198,000 followers.
Yeah. All of you, you guys need to find out about these guys. Let's talk about that process.
Sure. So that started with an announcement essentially that they were investing in social media marketing. Not necessarily just in, because they had been doing that all along, but more heavily doubling down on that investment across all of their platforms, and an invitation to their followers to follow them on social media. Because as you said before, they were primarily engaged in email marketing. They had collected this vast number of subscribers through the years. And now it's like, here, we're doubling down on being able to reach you where you are in the digital realm. And then, oh, by the way, this is who's helping us do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's basically what the genesis of it was. And then it quickly emerged as we need Grand River Agency. This is them talking, to become an enterprise member of Nano. And we need to highlight them in a specific way because Grand River Agency provides this service in such a way that small organizations with really, really tight budgets that typically would just get drowned out in all of the digital noise, they will be able to make that investment in their own social media marketing and actually start to see results from it.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Because they're saying that, hey, what these guys are doing is valuable. So
like the price point is right.
Right.
Because, you know, if you're talking about a small nonprofit organization, especially a nonprofit with very tight budget, you know, hiring a full-time digital marketing manager is incredibly cost prohibitive.
It's almost six figures, you know.
It's over six figures. Now, if you're looking at the median salary for, you know, an experienced, you know, mm-hmm. we'll say an experienced digital media, digital marketing manager, it's like $115,000. And I mean, that's not the case around here because, you know, we're in Western New York, Northwestern Pennsylvania.
The cost of living here is a lot lower.
Yeah. So, I mean, like around here, you might be looking at paying someone like that, like $50,000, which is a big investment for them. But I mean, if you're factoring in all of the larger markets,
right?
All of the big city markets where you have to hire, you know, a digital marketing manager and maybe even just one to try to stand out there. I mean, like that's a big chunk of change to invest. And we provide that service at a fraction of the cost of a full-time salary and benefits.
And
so the price point is right, you know?
And you get the advantage. Now you're not getting two full-time people, right? Or three or four, you know, if you look at our whole team, you're not right. getting four people working for you full-time at that rate, but you're getting four different minds with four different expert skill sets or however many people that we've assigned to that project, right? Because we have ourselves and we have other team members that we work with. But what you're getting is you're getting you know, a collective brain power with experts in different areas,
you know,
that are all applying their skill sets to this. And so that full time,
well, you and I are a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
The way that we operate, because I'm coming more from like the written content side of things. And that's just from my writing, my journalism background, you know, but you're more of the digital media guru and the video guy and the graphics guy and all of those things that, you know, that you can provide,
right.
You know, you and I are a perfect example of that.
Yeah. And so with working with us, you're getting, a much richer skill set than you would get if you hired some college kid. You know, a lot of times people's social media is done by their cousin that's in college, because, you know, the young people know the socials, you know, and so they hire somebody with zero experience who has learned everything they know from YouTube. And because they don't teach this in college, they have classes about this stuff in college, but you need to know and understand the people that are teaching this stuff in college don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that sounds incredibly cocky, but it's just the truth. I've worked with a lot of interns over the years, and they, you know, they're working on, you know, 10 to 15 years outdated information. And
it's perpetually like that in the college environment,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And so people are like, well, I'll hire this young person. They're younger. And now, given this young person has been using a cell phone since they were in utero, so they do know social media stuff, but, you know, you really need to understand that the person you're hiring needs to have the experience that knows what's going on and knows how to connect with it and is up with not just the trends, but the information that they need to know to be able to help you. So I just think that's important to talk about. If you're looking at hiring anybody to do this work, hire somebody that knows what they're doing. And
right.
I know
a specific example of that. If you're looking at any, you know, I went to St. Bonaventure University, one of the best journalism schools in the country, you know, and I would never bring them down because they're fantastic.
Sure.
But I mean, like at any college or university where you're talking about communications professionals, I mean, like that social media class is being taught by some tenured professor who's been there 25 years, whose expertise was just as a newspaper reporter 35 years ago. You know,
right.
And they're learning what they're, sorry to say, they're learning what their granddaughter taught them. They're teaching that, you know?
Right.
Yeah. That sort of thing.
Yeah. And like we said earlier, social media, that landscape is constantly changing. The game and the rules. It's the same with SEO. You know, the game and the rules are constantly changing. And the reason it's changing is, one, technology evolves, but two, they don't want people to game the system. So I feel like our job is to learn how to game the system, knowing that it's going to stop working, and then we have to come up with a new way to game the system.
Right. Well, at least we are able to do that. So,
yeah. Well, I'm really excited about the work that we're doing with Nano, and I'm really excited that they feel the, you know, I know it might feel like we're tooting our own horn today, but I'm also hoping that we've given you information as we've walked through this process that can help you. You know, really what our podcast is it's to help you. The whole reason we do this is to give you the information so that we can help you become an expert marketer on your own.
Right.
I'd love it if you could hire us, but hopefully you've heard some of this process some of the things that we've learned and that we're doing, because we want to help you. And if you're at the place where you're like, I need to hire somebody because this is more than I really want to get into, then give us a call, because we'd be glad to help you.
Right. Well, let's get back here real quick, if you don't mind, Josh,
to the
power of storytelling and all of that.
Sure.
In promoting charitable initiatives, you know, because I feel like, especially with a lot of smaller organizations, they get so bogged down in whatever best practice is being peddled by, you know, the informational gurus out there that advise you on how many times to post per day, when to post, you know, what to post at a certain time, all of those like best practices things that, you know, one person might say this, another expert might say this, like whatever they're putting out there, that they're so focused on that they're forgetting the most important element. Now, those things are important. Don't get me wrong. But the actual important element that you can't really quantify is the power of professional quality journalistic storytelling, because it's the story that's going to gain support. It's not what your organization is doing. It's not that the CEO did this thing. It's not that you are launching this initiative. It's how that initiative benefited this person, how your nonprofit benefited that single mother living in the inner city who was maybe struggling with food insecurity for her family of four, that sort of thing. And she's the story. Mm-hmm. You tell that. That's the story. It's not you. Your story is meant to be outwardly focused for ultimate impact. That's what we need to focus on.
In my time in ministry in the church, one of the things that I think I've seen over and over again is that people will follow and give to vision. You know, if you've got a big vision, they'll follow that. Right. And, you know, so if you know where you're going and what you want to do, people want to see that. They'll support that. But they can understand that vision when they start to see it happen. Right. When they start to see the stories, when they see somebody's, you know, if I'm thinking of the church world, when they see somebody's life who was a wreck and then it got better, they want to support that. They want to help other people see that happen. So they'll support that. They'll serve or they'll give or whatever. And I think it's the same thing with, you know, with any nonprofit, is that if you want people to donate to it, if you want people to volunteer for it, they need to know that what they're sowing into it is reaping a reward. And if you're just like, if your appeal is just, we're feeding people. Okay, who are you feeding? Tell me a story. Because if I see that story, then I'm plugged in. You know, then I'm invested. I care about this. And when they care about it, they will support it. So I think that's really, that shift is important. Because now, and I get it and I understand, you know, there are some organizations where you've got to be careful how you tell the story, because you've got confidentiality. You don't want to make a person who is in need feel like, you know, like a poster child. You know what I mean? So you want to be careful and you want to be thoughtful about it, but you can still tell your story in a way that shows what you're doing and who you're serving, because that way your donors want to be a part of it.
Right. Unless they're willing to be the poster child, unless they're so excited with the service that they're willing to be the, like, my life was improved so dramatically because of this service by this nonprofit, I can't help but sing their praises from the highest mountaintop, that sort of thing. But you're right. Yeah. Like if you have, you know, so there are confidentiality things and, you know, you don't have to identify who the people are, but you can still tell their story. You can tell their testimonial. You don't have to give their name.
So many ways to communicate that story without, you know, breaking that person's dignity, right? If telling the story would make that person feel less dignified, you know, you want to tell that story in a way. And, you know, and I know some people too, there's a piety, which isn't always bad, right? Where you say, well, I don't really want to toot my own horn. You know, I'm just trying to help people. I don't need the credit. You don't need the credit. I understand that you don't, and you know, but maybe you highlight one of your other volunteers, give them some credit.
In alignment with this whole storytelling, professional storytelling push. But you also do need to monitor the metrics, the analytics, to see if what you're doing is gaining any traction, is moving the needle for your nonprofit. But that can also be, what's the word I'm looking for here? That can be misleading sometimes, because you might post on your social media channels, you could post a picture of a check passing from some funder. Your nonprofit just received a $100,000 grant from, you know, X foundation to do Y services, you know, so you post that check passing photo of the CEO and the executive director of the foundation giving that big $100,000 check or something like that. And you might get hundreds and hundreds of likes and comments and even shares. But ultimately, that photo itself may not move the needle at all. It may not call anyone to action other than to just basically to congratulate you in the form of clicking like. But that story, again, of maybe that woman who's, you know, suffering, living with food insecurity, that story might have 15 likes, but directly resulted in 4 donations.
Right.
Which one was more impactful ultimately? Now, that's not to say it's, you know, it's wasted effort to post that photo of the check passing, but it's important to understand what is actually driving engagement. The photo that gets 300 likes that nobody gives a donation as a result of, because you're just saying, hey, we just got a ton of money. Who's going to donate because of that? But the story of the individual whose life has been transformed, has been improved, that results directly in a donation and compels other people to follow your mission further, might actually be the one that has the most engagement, even if it has a fraction of the likes, a fraction of the comments.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does make perfect sense. I think that's really the heart of using social media for your nonprofit, is that a lot of the tracking and the rules that you would think, you know, what they tell you about e-commerce stuff, for example, you can learn from it, but it doesn't always necessarily apply in the exact same way. You know, there's definitely a nuance to using social media and tracking and understanding the results that you're getting. And I think that's part of it, is recognizing that when you're telling a story, you know, the thing that really compels people is the opportunity for them to see they can make a difference in somebody's life by helping you. And I think that's really the heart of what you need to do.
Right. Right. So I have a question for you, Josh.
What is your question, man?
Is that a dog?
Is that a dog?
Is that a dog behind you?
So that's a bear behind me on the wall.
Okay.
You know, that I know that this is going to be a fun story that you're going to tell me, because for the past, you know, we've been friends for what, 10 years almost?
We've been friends for a while, man.
You know, if somebody posts an animal on social media, Kelsey will comment, "Is that a dog?"
Any animal. It could be a parrot, fish.
Yeah. Or a baby.
What have you. Yeah. Is that a dog? And it's not just me. It's other people. It's other reporters that I worked with along the way from when I worked at the Olean Times Herald. Because there are a bunch of us that were younger reporters at the time who all shared in this story, the genesis of this story. So I figured I would explain that, because at least locally and or regionally, the people who follow us on social media have noticed this, is that a dog thing?
Right.
So this is where it came from. When I was a reporter at the paper, I was sitting at my desk, and the publisher comes in, and he never came in the newsroom. Like, that just, he was always focused with advertising and everything like that. He never came in the newsroom, but this time he did. And where my desk was located was near the front of the newsroom, where the mail person would come and drop off the mail. So he was looking through the mail, presumably for something that was important. I don't know. But I mean, it was odd that he was in there in the first place. Now, someone in advertising had brought in their pet dog. And this thing is, you know, just this little, you know, ankle biter type dog or whatever. So it was just barking pretty much relentlessly for as long as it was in there, you know, and we're just doing our best to ignore it. So the publisher comes in and hears the barking. And he goes, looks up, and he's looking at all of us in the newsroom. He goes, "Is that a dog?" And all of us were so taken aback that he would ask such a stupid question. Of course it's a dog. You know, you're a smart guy.
It's a dog, of course.
So no one answers him. Obviously, like, dude, like, you know, look, you could go pet the thing if you want. We can clearly hear it. And then, you know, 15 seconds passes, and he's still, you know, thumbing through the mail and everything like that. The dog starts to bark again, and he goes, "Is that a dog?" Like, in pretty much the exact same tone, looked around the exact same way, you know, and like,
I asked.
Yeah, it was 15 seconds later, man. Like, how do you, So anyway, that became a thing, and that has been a thing now for the past over 10 years. that happened. And, you know, we didn't laugh at the time because our boss was literally in the room making that absurd comment or whatever.
Yeah, you know, and he was the kind of boss where if you had laughed out loud, you may have been kicked out the door with the dog. So
I would have been putting on the penguin outfit. Did you ever see that down in Bradford?
No, you had a penguin
mascot.
No.
Did you ever see that?
No.
No. I thought it was an advertising thing, man. Like, I thought you would have known all about it. It was like a mascot thing. So I wore its head around the office all the time. And I called it the Times Herald Penguin of Despair. I'm going to put that on it. Oh, I got laid off again.
The cone of shame.
The cone of shame. Yeah. So yeah, had we laughed at the time, might have gotten in trouble. But yeah, that story has caused many a hearty chortle by my friends and I over the years, and we still throw that out there on social media all the time, and people are confused, and people don't know, and that's actually the funniest part of it. But now they know. Now you know.
So,
dear listener,
by the way, listeners, if you're not following us on social media, you need to follow us on social media. And you may see on occasion a fun social graphic that I created with a dog in it or some other animal.
Is that a dog?
And my challenge to you is if you see that social graphic and it has an animal on it, I want you to comment, is that a dog? And let's just make that a thing.
Is that a dog?
Is that a dog?
Oh, man.
Oh. Well, hey, man, I have really enjoyed talking with you today, and I hope our listeners have got some good marketing advice and things they can learn from us today. So anything else we want to share with them before we close out, man?
No, just visit grandriver.agency or grandriveragency.io or grandriveragency.org. As I said earlier, they all go to the same place. But yeah, that's where you need to go, because there's even more awesome stuff there for you to check out.
Yeah.
And stratcom.live, which hosts this podcast, you might want to go there, because that also has some awesome educational content, some things that you might find enlightening in the world of small business and small nonprofit marketing.
Definitely. And if you like this podcast, leave a rating or review on the platform that you're listening to, whether it's Spotify or Apple. Let's let them know that this is good content so that they keep serving it up to more people who can get something out of it. If you're watching on YouTube, same thing. Make sure you subscribe to the channel, comment on it, share it with your friends. Let's get the word out so that we can help people just like you succeed.
Sounds good.
So, you know, man, this has been great. We all have a story to tell.
Let's tell it well.